ladies and gentlemen, direct from the smoke-filled room high atop Times Square in Midtown Manhattan, we bring you Big Daddy. In the middle of the smoke-filled room there, he's now pushing aside the empty coffee cups, the poker chips, and all the other things that are necessary to continue a vast and important political campaign. And he's ready to begin, ladies and gentlemen.
Before you tonight, a saddened man, with the realization that my opponent in this election has seen fit to reduce politics to the gutter level. He has leveled charges.
Ladies and gentlemen, direct from election headquarters, this is Gabe Kluberman, and we are standing now on the platform as the candidate is about to address his happy followers. Well, they have the orchestras playing, as you can hear in the background. It's a happy occasion here tonight. The reports have just come in that our candidate has received 7 votes in the 23rd district, which is at least 4 votes more than they expected from that district. And so now he's coming out on the platform with his lovely wife, Agatha. She just had her hair done for the occasion, and the candidate is about to speak. This is Gabe Kluberman standing by, and in just a few moments you will hear the voice of the candidate himself.
Hooray for the U.S. of A. Hooray for the brave, doughty candidates. Hooray, hooray, they ever upward they will go with all their charges. I am true and honest. I believe in peace. I believe in women. I believe in you, Hoot. I believe in all the good things.
Look at that old Finch over there. All he wants to do is get elected. And here I am standing between you and all the evils of the outside world. The howling winds, the swirling seas of adversity, the dangerous reefs of total disaster, of war and devastation. Oh my, hooray for my day platform, my marvelous workers in the wheat fields. I give all due credit to the system, but we got to change it so that I can get in. Hooray, 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 hooray for me. Oh, hooray for labor. Hooray for capital. Hooray for you. Hooray for all the other good things. And I want to tell you, beware. You'll hear a lot of claptrap and bad charges made. You'll hear a lot of things which are not true. No, not true. What do they mean by saying that things about me? I don't want to get elected. I just wish to lead you forward. I want to bring all the good things to pass. And into lots of peaceful, peaceful harbors. Into the beautiful future I will lead you.
Oh, it was very nice. Yeah, it's very nice. There's a salute to all of them out there, running around. Yes, sir. Any requests out there for you? Did you like that? I'm not bad. That's all-purpose, you know. It's an all-purpose campaign song. And, of course, you're listening to a guy who his head. He's been singed by the fire of the democratic process. You see, the trouble with the democratic process is you're liable to just lose so bad. And, you know, that's one of the great problems with the democratic process, that quite often tells the truth. I mean, you stand up there, you know, and you tell them all that stuff, and then everybody hollers boo, and that's the end of it. But this is literally what happened to me, and I don't like to, you know, scratch away at old wounds. I mean, you know, pick at old scabs. No, I don't wish to do that. Are there any old scabs out here listening? Any old strike breakers tonight, huh? Get away, you think. We don't need your vote, boy, I'll tell you. But on the other hand, if you have recanted, we certainly would like to have you in the fold here. However, I don't know whether any of you have ever actually run for anything. Have you ever run for anything in there, Herb? You have? Well, you have a look in the eye of a man who won when he ran. Well, did you run hard? And you lost. That's why you're sitting behind the board tonight, eh? And you spend all of your time fooling around with ham radio magazines and Allied catalogs and stuff like that. A guy has to find something to do ultimately, you know. But nevertheless, you're listening to a man now who every time he sees a candidate mount the platform, there's a little sweat begins to break out on me, right on the, you know, just the tip of my nose. You know, I remember a horrible, fantastically bad scene that sometimes at 3 a.m. you know, just the flashes before me, like those terrible scenes that you see. You know, you know the old thing about when a guy is going down for the third time, you know, he's drowning, and all the fantastic moments of his life flash before him. You know that one? Well, since most people don't really live any life anymore, I imagine the great scenes of all the movies they've seen, you know, the great fantastic scenes of the movies, are going to flash before him. You know, great moment with Dustin Hoffman. But that's, you know, neither here nor there. I don't wish to digress, because maybe I don't want to face the issue, as we candidates often say. I mean, it's your favorite candidate who faces the issue, and it's the other fink who makes unfounded charges. And this is a golden rule of politics. But I remember the terrible experience I had the time that I ran for office. I actually ran for public office, and I was judged by my peers. And that's a, believe me, that's a searing experience. You know, there's a look in the eye of a man who expects, when his peers judge him, that the peers will immediately hoist him to the top of the flagpole. Now, that's one kind of guy. There's the other kind of guy who is damn certain that when he's judged by his peers, they're going to do what he's always deserved. And this can be very scary, you know, the secret feeling. And I came, it happened in school. See, I suspect that candidates are born very early in life. I mean, successful ones. Failures are born very early in life, too. I say that failures are not born, they're made. And I say successes are not born, they're made by the little arrows and slings of unconscionable fate that come whistling out of the darkness at him when he's not equipped to handle them. I came into school one morning, I was a junior, see, and it was just this time of the year. It was June. Yeah, it was about 2 weeks before the end of school, you know. I walk in there, I sit down, it's homeroom, and Miss Snyder's there in the front of the class. And we never had much palaver in homeroom, just once in a while, you know, there'd be announcements and stuff like that. We sit there for about 20 minutes and pick at old scabs and blow our nose and you know, that kind of stuff. And I come cooling in there, you know, it's June. Oh, man, I can taste the spring out there. And I could feel the itch in my hand, you know, of the ball hitting the glove. You know what I mean? You could hear the sound of a ping-pong ball somewhere off down in the gym someplace, and I could hear the sound of a tennis ball coming drifting in through the Venetian blinds. It's spring, and the sap was rising. And, I'll tell you, there was a chick in my homeroom. I'll never forget her. She sat way up in the front with the A's. And untouchable, of course, totally. And remote, cool. But she was chiseled out of molten alabaster. And I'm looking at her in this shaft of sun that is coming down on this day, this historic day. And I'm not even listening to the announcements, which never had anything to do with me. They were always talking about the biology club was having a meeting at 3:30. which, of course, I never was involved in, and there's stuff like the safety club. Can you imagine a kid that would join the safety club? Now, that's a kid who's, by the age of 15, already owns a $20,000 endowment term policy life insurance thing through the Metropolitan people, you know? And he's the kid that when he's asked for Christmas what he wants, he says, I would like a $50 savings bond, please. That's a separate type of kid, and I was not part of that. I'm a grasshopper in the great entomological game of life. If you're an ant, others are butterflies, others are gall worms. I'm sure that we have two of them here. We have one that heads one of the departments here, a born solid gall worm. We have corn borers. We're all part and parcel of the animal world in our own way, the insect world particularly. I don't relate to lions and tigers. I relate a little bit to guinea pigs, I'll concede. By the way, somebody called up here earlier tonight and said, what's the name of your guinea pig? I repeat, the name of my guinea pig is Conway Tweety, named after a famous moderately respectable hillbilly singer. It's because this guinea pig resembles him, the front of the face more, you know, the way the nose comes down. And I say that the guinea pig is going to become a successful animal. The day they quit, you know, the day you kids stop calling your guinea pigs Fatty and Schwartz and names like that, you know, you've got to, believe me, where would dogs go? You don't think over here at the Westchester Show, where they have at the garden here, that any dog named Fido or Spot is going to win, do you? No, it's always Baron Offenhausen von Klingenmeister of Sunnybrook Farms, the third. He wins. So the first time you start naming your guinea pigs with the proper resounding name, you know, Manfred von Richthofen 12 of Braunschweiger under Oberthems, then you have a guinea pig that's on his way. Ain't nobody going to stick their finger and say, oh, he's fat. Look at he bite my finger. No, no. Manfred von Dingelschnauber from Braunschweiger, Germany, does not bite your finger. He attacks you because you are encroaching upon his castle keep. Speaking of guinea pigs, this is WOR. Of course, we ain't the guinea pig. You are the guinea pig. Oh, now we run any experiments on you. But we have all kinds of election returns coming. And for those of you who love to hear these great speeches and returns and all that stuff and all those exciting numbers, I'm sure that you're going to be interested in this. Lester Smith's got it all. He's going to be ready in about 20 seconds. So stand by, all you guys in the smoke-filled room, all of your people that are shifting around out there from one foot to the other, waiting to see whether you know, one or the other is going to get the nod. This is not really an election. This is a primary, which is kind of a primary pre-election. But here we go. We'll be back in about five.
And we do begin our WOR primary election headquarters coverage here on WOR 710. And if any one thing can be said to mark today's New York statewide primary, it is a succession of charges from all kinds of sources of total snafus in a number of areas of the city in connection with the opening of polling places, the failure of the polling booths to function properly. As a matter of fact, within a half an hour after the polls opened, the New York State McGovern campaign condemned what it called the outrageous delays in the opening of polls and their proper functioning in at least two districts. Several places reported, for example, at 3:30, half an hour after the polls were to have opened, that they weren't opening yet. Queens Councilman Matthew Troy, who was the Queens County Democratic chairman and also a McGovern campaign aide, was incensed. At 4 o'clock over in Queens, he said 27 of the 38 districts in his area were not open yet. And he said at 5 o'clock, 2 hours after the polls were to have opened, he said there were still five districts that weren't functioning. He said that it was one of the worst snafus that he'd ever seen. Bronx Borough President Robert Abrams also said that he couldn't recall as many errors of omission and commission in connection with a primary or an election as were obviously occurring today. And incidentally, this reporter was part and parcel of one of those snafus in his own polling district here in New York City today, so I know whereof these gentlemen are speaking. Polls closed in the city at 10 o'clock. They closed elsewhere in the state at 9, except for one congressional district in Buffalo, where a state Supreme Court justice ordered the polls to remain open for an extra 2 hours because of a snafu relating to 207 voting machines in the 37th congressional district in Buffalo. Now, we do have the first returns in. They are, of course, spotty. They do not relate to the selection of delegates to the Democratic Convention, but here's what we have. In the first returns, in the 14th Congressional District in Queens, with 10 election districts out of 167, Congressman Rooney, who is looking for his 13th term in the House of Representatives, has a very wide margin over his chief challenger, former Congressman Allard Lowenstein. Rooney, 968 votes, Lowenstein, 479 votes, and the third party running in that race, Gross, has 198. That's Irving Gross with 188 votes. In the 16th Congressional District in Kings County, where Congressman Emanuel Seller has held that seat since 1922, with three of the 265 districts, he is trailing one of his two challengers. That's in the 16th Congressional District in Brooklyn. Congressman Seller is being led at this moment by Elizabeth Holtzman, who has 111 votes, Seller 79, and a third challenger, R.E. O'Donnell, has 59 votes. In the 19th Congressional District here in Manhattan, with seven of the 235 electoral districts, the incumbent, Congressman Charles Rangel, has 366 votes, his challenger, Livingston Wingate, 224. In Kings County, in the 13th Congressional District, in what has been one of the most bitterly fought races thus far, the incumbent, Congressman Bertram Podell, has 332 votes. Leonard Simon, his challenger, has 99 votes. In another district, in the 21st Congressional District, the seat held by Congressman Herman Badillo, with just a handful of congressional districts reporting, Badillo has an almost 3-to-1 margin over his challenger. Badillo, 1,910, and his challenger, a state assemblyman, Manuel Ramos, has only 617 votes. We do have the first returns in the State Court of Appeals race. There are four candidates, three to be elected. And heading that list at the moment is Justice Bernard Meyer with 363 votes. Running second is the only woman among the four candidates, Justice Nanette Dembitz with 339 votes. There has never been a woman to serve on the State Court of Appeals. Running third is Justice Martuscello, who has 261 votes. That's Henry Martuscello. And running fourth in the field is Justice Lawrence Cook, who has 199 votes. Those are a scattering of reports that we have right now. And at this moment, let's go to McGovern headquarters and John Wingate.
In the West Ballroom of the Biltmore Hotel, let's don't use any cliches. It would be pure corn. It's not a matter of elation or jubilation. They are simply awaiting the expected. Their man is going to win the presidential primary. They have little doubt about that. No one else has any doubt. They're waiting for him to come down, accept it, and move on. The big story is the Secret Service tight guard. They are all over the place. Most of them are pretty clean-shaven. They're today's Ivy League, which is a far cry from 1950, for example. They ring the balcony above him. They wear the Secret Service identification. They have a sense of humor. I said to one of them, it's not you guys to worry about, but those out on the floor who can't be tabbed as Secret Service men. He said, you're right. That's the story. They are awaiting the expected. Now, despite the tight Secret Service guard, we can't get within XX feet of him. Three people with no identification whatever walked in. How do I know? One was from the station. Two were friends. They came in to see me. One had a shopping bag. That's the story at McGovern headquarters. The awaiting or the expected. Now back to Lester Smith at WOR headquarters.
Thank you, John. We have one congressional district and one election district in the 20th congressional district, which of course is that very confused and somewhat ridiculous redistricted district, which runs from 4th Street in Lower Manhattan all the way up into the far reaches of Riverdale in the Bronx, where incumbent Congressman William Ryan and incumbent Congresswoman Bella Abzug are battling. Ryan has won Mrs. Abzug's own election district, 103-66. We have the first returns on that new redistricted 22nd congressional district in the Bronx. 20 election districts out of 308. Congressman James Scheuer with 735 votes. Congressman Jonathan Bingham with 616 votes. We also have an update on that 16th congressional district in Kings County, where Congressman Emanuel Seller has held fourth for the past 50 years. He still trails with 25 of 265 election districts. He is trailing Elizabeth Holtzman, who has 856 votes, Seller 798, and R.E. O'Donnell with 566. Now let's go to John Scott at Ryan headquarters.
It would appear, Lester, that at least according to the people here, the constituents of William Ryan, that he's off to a smashing victory. The results from 50 election districts show that Congressman Ryan has 5,551 votes. His opponent, Bella Abzug, has 2,915, and not quite a 2-1 lead. There was a great deal of conjecture, of course, as to whether or not Bill Fitzryan, who's served in Congress since 1960, would be able to win in this, what can we call it, a gerrymandered district up here in the 20th? In any event, Bella Abzug made her challenge here, and as things look now, she did not make too wise a choice. I'd like to repeat that latest figure. 50 election districts, Ryan, 5,551, Bella Abzug, 2,915. John Scott from Bill Ryan's district, the 20th district, reporting now back to WOR and Lester Smith.
And we'll give you one update on that 20th election district. With 32 of the 260 electoral districts, Ryan 2945, Abzug 1438. With 36 of 167 in the Kings County in the 14th congressional district, Rooney 3030, Lowenstein 2190. We'll have continuing coverage. We'll join you again on the 11 o'clock news and throughout the night until all these races are determined, as well as what the delegate count is. Bear in mind that once the polls close, Senator McGovern already had 41 of New York's 278 convention delegates because they were running unopposed. Lester Smith from WR's primary election headquarters, back once again to Gene Shepard.
Thank you, Les. Oh, shucks. None of the voting machines even worked. Oh, and that's bad. You know, that's so typical of what's happening in New York in many ways, you know? We go off galloping, everybody's cheering, the flags are flying, and Gabe Pressman, Lester Smith, everybody in the world is there, you know, and then all of a sudden the phones start ringing, and it turns out that none of the machines worked, and none of the polls were open, and people lined up and yelled and hollered, and half of the ballots didn't arrive, and when they did, it had the Macy ads on the back, and, you know, the whole thing. Well, I'll tell you, I'm not surprised. I was walking. That's one of the great things about the democratic process, because I mean, there's a lot of things wrong with it, but one of the great things about it is that it is a human process. In other words, everybody flubs around, and they yell and holler and drop all the pens, and the machines blow fuses and everything else. That the smoothest election in the world is an election that's being held in a totalitarian country. It works like clockwork. I mean, the machines always work. Absolutely. And no problems with arguments outside of the polling place. No problems that way either. Well, nevertheless, though, you know, hearing this, I must say that that elections I find exceedingly exciting. And I look forward to presidential elections particularly. Don't you, Herb, really? I think they're probably the most spectacular, I suppose you can call it a folk rite in one sense. It really is, you know. They're one of the most spectacular human events that almost any of us are involved in during our lifetime, one way or another. I mean, most of us, of course, are participants. Very few people ever run for president, although you're listening to one who did. And it was a searing experience. And I can only tell you this, as an ex-candidate, I know that there are many things which cannot be said before the electorate. In my case now, I'll just tell you, Mike, you wonder, well, what do you mean run for president? Well, a president is a president. And a president of anything is a president. That's an impressive title, president. And I came into class this day. I was in my junior class. This is a year that I found out about the whole electoral process. And I suspect that one of the things that people hate about democracy is that guys they don't like keep getting elected. And this really is basically what a lot of people find wrong with a system such as we have. And, of course, ultimately, that's what the system really is about. And so, in a sense, it's just like, I'll tell you what it's like. It's like even in athletics, that if the umpire makes a call, that's a questionable call, but it's in your favor. Nobody jumps up and hollers, "Kill that umpire, that bum. Did you see what he did to those poor other guys?" I've never heard that in a ball game. On the other hand, if the umpire makes a decision that goes against you, immediately somebody in the post writes an editorial that what they ought to do is put in electronic umpires so that these mistakes cannot happen again. Well, actually, have you noticed that a lot of the guys that were not for primaries are now for them because they're winning primaries? In fact, I can remember earlier, a long time ago, like, say, a year ago, McGovern, for example, was against the whole primary system. You shouldn't have primaries anymore. Well, that's because he figured at that time probably that he wasn't going to win many of them. Well, then suddenly he took off, and now you don't hear that anymore. See, systems, any kind of a system, in whether you're working in a, and I'm not saying I'm pro or anti-McGovern, I'm just saying these are the kind of things that happen. You change your mind on the way to the bank if you've hit the jackpot about gambling. If you lose your shirt, gambling becomes an evil. And this is, you know, it's human. It's as human as any conceivable thing could be. In short, if you're winning, the game is a beautiful game. If you're losing, well, the game is, it's a passe game. Who cares about that game? It should be changed. We ought to take up badminton and so forth. Now, I'll never forget my feeling about this. See, I walk into junior classes, beautiful spring morning, and, it was one of those magnificent days, you know, when the birds are singing. Theoretically, the birds are singing. Now, birds don't necessarily sing when they're making a peeping noise, you know. What they're really doing is telling all the other birds to go to hell, basically. That's really what birds are doing. And so while we're on the subject, would you please hit the money button? Well, this is what the score is about, friends. Oh, yes. All right, how about a little comercial for Portugal? And if you're a youth type, you'll want to know, I'm sure, that the TAP, the International Portuguese Airline, the Intercontinental Airline of Portugal, TAP, has introduced a special youth fare. And if you want to split, friends, here's your chance, and you can do it for only $210, and you still have a trip to the home base, you know, in your back pocket. $210 round trip economy airfare to Portugal, subject to government approval, and the ticket is good for one solid year. You can sit on your behind on the beach at the Costa do Sol for 364 days, and then you run out and cash your ticket in and fly home. You know, tap the old man for some more dough. Anyone under 26 and over 12 is eligible. In Portugal, you'll meet the European kids in the wine country, probably under some of the casks, in the ancient castles, in the museums, and of course, you know, that a lot of them spend their time in the museums, walking around looking at armor and stuff like that. So I would suggest you make the Portuguese scene this year. Call your travel agent or TAP at 421-8500 for complete information about TAP's $210 youth fare to Portugal. Go where the European kids go. Portugal. You've got to admit I have a lot of Sabre fare. Have you noticed that? It's my intercontinental, you know, it's the way we are after we have traveled so much around the world. It's that Joey DeVever that you get after a while around these places, you know. When you eat a little, you know, you eat a little of Portuguese cuisine, and you do things like that, and you do, you know. Costa do Sol. No, is it Sol? Sol. I'm not talking about Saul Berkowitz. That's somebody else, and you can tell him to go back into his hole as far as I'm concerned. But nevertheless, you know, you get this way. If you travel abroad, you see things, you know things. And nothing really ultimately totally impresses you any longer. I can see the day when I arrive in hell, and I ask, I arrive down there, and I've come down the chute, see? After all, I've traveled all over the world, and I might as well make this scene, too. And so I'm here on this special round-trip economy group fare, and I arrive, and I'm sitting there in second class on the River Styx, and we are proceeding across the river. And I say, "This is a very interesting climate you have here. This is everything I've heard.
How is it during the season? This was a rainy season, of course. It's much different, much rain, and the temperature is a little higher. But outside of that, you will find one of the good things about the season is that very few tourists come here. They are more or less personal friends and permanent party, we shall say. And as I travel through, I ask, that's the inevitable questions. No. This crying, this weeping in the wings will not help. It's not going to do you no good. The people have spoken.
We have on this stage...
Thank you. He's done. Did you see how I cut him off? That's power. No, I did that purposely. Don't look confused. The trouble with you is your mind does not travel with the great images and the impressions that come sweeping in off of the ancient glaciers of Sharon's home. Oh, yes. You say we have another commercial? We've done TAP. Wait a minute. Let's see. We have a general... Yes, how about that one with the bugles, please? No, thank you. No, all right. That's good.
And now entering the list. His visor down. Yes, sir. Right now, friends, General Tire is having a pre-4th of July sale on the famous General Jet White Wall Tire. During this great sale, you can buy a complete set of four tires for only $59.80. And that's the popular size, 650-13. It's one of the most popular ones, way up there on the top 10, you know. Plus, $175 federal excise tax per tire. It's the famous dual-tread design. So you watch for that big red G, General Tire. And you can see Big Joe Callahan at Nassau Suffolk General Tire Service, 154 Front Street, Hempstead, New York. Very nice. That's Big Joe Callahan. Big Joe. Yeah, he used to fight as a middleweight. Well, that's why that beak. But after all, I'll tell you. We have one more. Let's save that to last. What do you say, huh? As a soup son. That's one of the things I picked up. In my travels. It's they used to say it's the Red Bird Diner on Front Street in Tom's River. Soup son. And, of course, it was mulligatawny, which is a Jersey soup. And, of course, when you travel around like I do, you see so many things, you know. I've had clams in the Howard Johnson in Houston, Texas. I know what food is like. I have tasted, I've dipped into the wells, the Imperium Springs. That's Imperium Springs. It's another phrase I picked up when I was in Greece. There's a little town outside of, outside of Athens, what's his name? It's on the tip of my tongue. There's a little town. Everybody there is named Opolis something. You probably know if you've been in Greek. You know that town. And, yes. And all the ladies wear the black things over the head. Yes, you've been there, yes. Wonderful seafood, yes. There's clams, rubber clams. And they use them over and over again. The tourists come in. And this is a wonderful little native dish. They make some other gutta percha. And most, natives from Indiana who are visiting think that means percha, like you catch in the Calumet River. But gutta percha is another kind of percha. That doesn't mean gutsy perch. And I'm sorry. That, of course, you also find occasionally you get the turkey leg made of a papier-mâché. Papier-mâché. Indeed. I like it especially with an oil and vinegar thing on it. A little touch of garlic. Just a little touch. Well, I say, what the hell, you only live once. Take it all with you, It's just like the beer commercial says. Speaking of commercials, kid writes me, says, Shepard, what's your favorite commercial these days? Outside, of course, those magnificent Rheingold commercials you were doing. Well, I had to take him by the horns, And I said, well, it ain't the one you think. It's not the one about, and I hate the whole thing. That's not my favorite commercial. Nah. That's the favorite commercial of the masses. And I ain't one of the masses. Nah. Hell no. No, not at all. My favorite commercial, I'll give you a brass figurine with a bronze oak leaf palm if you can recognize what this is. My favorite commercial currently stars the inimitable Howard Cosell. Howard Cosell, who has made Bombast a coming Olympic competitive event. There's the freestyle and the classical bombast, of course. And then there's what they call the heel and toe bombast, which is most practiced in the European countries of the East German bloc. Heel and toe bombast. Have you ever seen the heel and toe free springing jump? That's a good one. Have you ever seen that when you hop up in the air, you know? First you go back in your heels, and then you go up in your toe, and then you count three, and you hop up in your end, and they measure it, see? It's not a popular sport, I'll agree. But America never has appreciated the more subtle sports. How about the downwind rifle slalom shot? Have you seen that one? That's when these Swedes go sailing down here with shotguns. They shoot them at the trees as they go by. Have you seen that one? Of course, I'm not inventing it. Just because they do not do that in cutesy pie places like Sugarloaf, they are doing it in fun places like Finland. And you go whistling down the hill, see, with your shotgun going, full blast. And the number of spectators, you lose 7 points per spectator you hit. You're not supposed to hit a spectator. Of course, it's difficult to go over the course without hitting a few. And that's what makes the game what it is. And, of course, I don't want to push it too hard. Would you give me a little more, please? No, that soft, the quiet entree into life there, please. Yes, please. All is order tonight. All is serene. Yes, the quiet window panes of your mind glance at the eternal. Oh, please. Was that Vitalis? Yes, well, that's true. That's the product. But that isn't the question I was about to ask. The question I was about to ask, please reset that, if you will, in there. You don't mind if I call you boy, do you, Herb? You do? You got something on the contract about that? Am I allowed to call you? What can I call you? Hey, you? Is that all right? All right. all right, while we regroup our forces here, we've had a temporary setback. Our line to Gabe Pressman is just broken, and there's a confusion here in a moment. While we're regrouping our forces, how about a commercial for Newsday?
It's one of our louder ones. 32 years, Newsday, the Long Island newspaper, has become one of the great success stories in publishing history. Recently, we started a Sunday edition. And what Newsday has done so well 6 days a week, we're now doing just as well on Sunday. For example, our coverage of television.
I'm Lou Schwartz, managing editor of Newsday, and I can tell you one secret about developing a Sunday paper. You give readers something the other papers don't give them. In the Sunday Newsday, for instance, there's a TV book that has no competition because the other papers don't have one. It's a handy color magazine, more like a TV guide than a newspaper TV section, and you keep it on top of your TV all week. We think it'd be great, even if there were competition, but we're prejudiced. Anyway, if you want a Sunday paper with a TV listings magazine, there's only one place to get it, in Sunday Newsday.
Newsday, Long Island's own Sunday newspaper. No service charge for home delivery.
Thank you. That was tonight's salute to Wally Ballou. And, by the way, I'll award you a brass pig, McGee, if you can tell me who Wally Ballou is. Wally Ballou. Well, since we are now getting into theological discussions, when you discuss commercials in our time, you're talking about a religion, really, basically. And you are. You certainly are. And I'm a believer, just like anyone else. I'm right here with you. And one of my favorite commercials is Howard Cosell. And he's standing there in front of a fantastic sporting event. And what is the sporting event that Howard Cosell is reporting on in that commercial? If you want to see a funny commercial, look for that one. What is the sporting event that he's reporting on? Well, you're exempt. Come on, because I point it out to you and then you see it. So, people who work for the management do not get fig leggies of any type. I will say this, though, however, on the way to the firehouse, that I'm always amused. To me, some of the funniest stuff that ever happens in the human comedy happens during elections. I like the look of hurt innocence on the part of a candidate who has just totally destroyed the character of the guy that's running against him, and then turns to the audience and to the TV camera and says, "I'm really sorry. I'm a man tonight who is truly saddened that my old friend, Senator Bullard, a man whom I've known for years, has brought this campaign down to a
to a campaign of vilification and smear. Senator Bullard knows very well that the things he is saying about me have no basis in truth. And, of course, the reason Senator Bullard is doing this, we all know this. Someone ought to remind Senator Bullard that getting elected is not everything. And I do believe that the vilification which has been heaped upon me will, of course, be ignored by the electorate at large, who will immediately see through this heinous campaign which has been waged. And I love that. To me, this makes W.C. Fields look absolutely valid. J. Cheever loophole. And I suppose it's as classical. You know, it's the classical quality to it. It's a year after year. It's the classic. It's the beautiful, limpid, almost Grecian simplicity of charge and countercharge, of hurt and counter-hurt, of believing in truth and beauty and standing like a bulwark against the howling evils of the outside screaming world of disaster that each candidate presents to us. And so tonight I stand before you, a man who does not wish to be elected. No, I merely wish to lead this great country of ours into the placid, into the limpid seas of peace and tranquility, and carry our country to future greatness, which, of course, we all know all those other guys have been preventing from coming on for many, many years. But now, as we approach the election, and as the vilification rises, you can see why I don't have many friends. There's always the guinea pig club. And, oh, yes, we sit around and compare guinea pigs. By the way, for those of you who have been wondering how to trim the toenails on a hamster, we've just received expert advice, both hamsters and gerbils, how to trim the toenails. One kid called in. He says he lines the cage of his gerbil. Is it a gerbil? Hamster. He lines the cage of his hamster with sandpaper. He does. He just lays a lot of sandpaper down there in the ground. And then he sticks his finger into the cage and chases the hamster around for about 3 or 4 days. He says it wears down his toenails. He loses a lot of weight. He keeps his stomach flat and hard. And he says it works out real good. So you see, it is an educational moment you've just spent. And, by George, as I look out tonight into the great, vast, swirling void of time, over the eternal, constantly ever-changing cosmos of existence, And all those other good things, I say to you, you stick with the peanut butter. It's real good. It's tasty and sticks to your ribs. George, not many of the campaign speeches will, but peanut butter will. This is WOR New York. You stay tuned for Lester Smith and the News.
This is the news in detail on the hour from the WR newsroom. A Democratic presidential hopeful goes for the big total in convention delegates. Redistricting puts congressional members in a fight for their political lives. In Brooklyn, a longtime representative battles a younger man's challenge. It's all coming in now to WR News. Here are the reports on New York State primary. Even though the polls in New York City closed only an hour ago and statewide at 9 o'clock tonight, we already have the resolution of a number of congressional primary battles here in New York City. Congressman William Ryan has won very easily from Bella Abzug in the race for that redistricted Manhattan 20th Congressional District in the city's most publicized primary battle. That, of course, as you're aware, is the congressional district which runs from the lower reaches of Manhattan's west side, starting around 4th Street to take in Congresswoman Abzug's own house, I believe, all the way up to the Riverdale section of the Bronx. And it may well be one of the most ridiculous congressional districts in the United States, thanks to New York State's legislature. But nonetheless, that's what it is after the reapportionment. And although we have about one-third of the totals in already, Congressman Ryan is being listed as the winner. 73 out of 260 election districts. Ryan, 7,536. Abzug, 3,827. Congressman Herman Badillo has won the Democratic nomination for the new 21st Congressional District. and he was a very easy winner over his opponent, Democratic New York State Assemblyman Manuel Ramos Padillo, the first person of Puerto Rican descent in the House of Representatives, elected to Congress in 1970. He was running almost 3-1 better than his opponent, Assemblyman Ramos, in that race. And Congressman Bertram Podell has defeated State Assemblyman Leonard Simon in the 13th Congressional District in Brooklyn for the Democratic nomination in what was easily one of the most bitter local congressional campaigns in many, many years. He, too, was running close to 3-1 better than his rival. There are a number of very other interesting races that are going on in the 16th Congressional District in Kings County in Brooklyn, with 182 of 265 election districts, or certainly better than half. Congressman Emanuel Seller, who has held that seat since 1922, when Warren Harding was president of the United States, is in the fight of his political life in a three-way race. It is Congressman Seller trailing Elizabeth Holtzman by a handful of votes. 182 of 265 districts. Holtzman, 9,639. Seller, 9,448. And R.E. O'Donnell running a poor third with 2,945. That 16th Congressional District, of course, is the district where for many elections, it was just a sort of cup of coffee for Congressman Seller. Running against him was considered an exercise in total futility. But at this moment, he is trailing.